these chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6, as we discussed last week, are all linked together. In chapter 3, Krishna highlighted the path of Karma Yoga, and he explains elaborately what is the theory of Karma Yoga. Then in chapter 4, Krishna came to the topic of Jnana Yoga. Hence, in chapters 3 and 4, both the sadhanas of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been explained very clearly. In chapter 5, Krishna is reinforcing again the Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga topic, summarizing, and also telling us how Karma Yoga will link to Jnana Yoga. We have learnt that Karma Yoga does not lead to moksha. Karma Yoga leads to purification of mind, and with purification of mind one goes to Jnana Yoga, and with Jnana Yoga one attains moksha. Therefore, in this chapter 5, verses 10, 11 and 12, Krishna highlighted again the concept of Karma Yoga. These three verses, 10, 11 and 12, highlight the Karma Yoga concept. And we have seen up to last week verse number 12. We concluded verse number 12. From verses 13 to 21, Krishna will take up the topic of Jnana Yoga. So let us quickly refresh our memory on what we covered in verse number 12. Having spoken about Karma Yoga, Krishna explained that one has a choice. You can follow the path of Karma Yoga, or you can disregard the path of Karma Yoga. One who follows the path of Karma Yoga is called a Yuktaha in verse number 12. See the word Yuktaha. And one who does not follow the path of Karma Yoga is called a Ayuktaha. In line number 3 you see Ayuktaha. And if we have a choice, we can decide whether we want to follow or not to follow the path. We should also know what are the consequences. What is the benefit of following Karma Yoga? Krishna says, when you karma phalam tyaktva. Tyaktva means when you give up, when you renounce the fruits or the results of your action, what will be the result? Every action that you do by surrendering the fruits to the Lord, the result is apnoti, means one attains shantim naistikim. One attains not just any peace, but this peace, shantim, is called naishikim. Whenever we do any good actions with the right attitude, they bring about what is known as sattvic peace, sattvic happiness. And sattvic happiness is something that is eternal, that goes on forever. It does not change. Whereas when we do anything for selfish reasons, we also get happiness, but that is called rajasic and tamasic happiness. And that type of happiness which we get from the world is temporary and takes us further and further away from God. Whereas sattvic happiness gives us a deep sense of happiness and brings us closer and closer to God. That's why it is called shantim naistikim. It is a very pure type of happiness. It is unending bliss. And that is a reward that a karma yogi gets. Peace of mind, yes. No disturbance at all. And how does one give up karma phalam? Because whatever action we do, there is going to be a result. Therefore, how does one renounce karma phalam? And that has got to be at two stages. as a karma yogi, one renounces the fruit of the action by cultivating the right attitude. And therefore, when you have the right attitude, you give up two types of phala, two types of results. One is called drishta. Drishta means what I can see, what I can experience immediately. That also I give up. I am not interested. I don't keep on focusing on what is going to be the result of my action. I surrender that part to the Lord. And the second type is called adrishta. Adrishta is what cannot be seen. Meaning, if you give up totally the fruits of your action, even some people aspire that through action they want to attain heaven. That is adrishta. It's an unseen phalam. Even that also a karma yogi gives up. Why does a karma yogi give up attainment of heaven? Why is he not interested in the attainment of heaven? It is also temporary. After completing your enjoyment in heaven, you will come back to earth. So a karma yogi gives up both drishta phalam and adrishta phalam. Both one surrenders. At the higher stage, when one becomes a jnani, one understands through jnana yoga that I am not this body, this mind, this intellect. When one looks upon all the transactions as a witness, which Krishna told us so beautifully in this chapter, that attitude is, I do nothing at all. If you recall in, what was that verse number? Verse number 8, I do nothing at all. I meaning the consciousness in the body, am the witness, but I am not responsible, I am not doing any actions. Therefore, you give up all desires for all your actions. Because you are not doing any actions anymore. So there is no more desire for result of the action. Just leave everything in the hands of God. You don't even desire moksha. Why don't you desire even moksha? The jnani does not even desire moksha. Why is there no desire for moksha?
It comes automatically once you reach that.
So why even you don't want to desire, you don't even want to think about moksha? Sorry? No, you're a jnani. You're living that attitude that I do nothing at all, and you don't even think about moksha also. Because even to think about moksha, you have to struggle for moksha. And then when you don't get it, it also leads to disappointment. So I even surrender moksha into the hands of the Lord. Whenever it comes, it's up to Him. I don't even think about it. There's a total surrender.
But moksha is a goal, isn't it?
Moksha is the ultimate goal, but when you become a jnani, you even surrender everything into the hands of the Lord. You don't even think about moksha. You just carry on doing your duties and put everything into the hands of God. Even moksha also, there's no more desire. Because as long as a desire is there, that means continuously there will be a struggle for moksha. But if I'm doing all the right actions, moksha will come. There is no way moksha cannot come. So I even surrender moksha to the hands of the Lord. Autopilot. That's it. Now, that is a yukta. What about a yukta? One who does not follow the path of karma yoga. In verse number 12, Krishna says, such a person does all actions, but what is the driving force of the action? Kama karena. Kama karena means kama is desires. Karena means actions. All actions are driven by selfish desires. Such a person is called a ayuktaha, who does not follow the path of karma yoga. And what is the result of such a person's life? And here Krishna says, phale sakto nibadhyate. Saktaha means he is attached to the phala, to the result, and thus he or she is bound. Nibadhyate means bound. Right? And when we say bound means because you expected the result of your action. Every action you did driven by a desire, therefore the result will definitely have an effect on you. If it is successful, it elates you. If it is not successful, it makes you depressed, agitated, angry. That is what we mean by you are bound by the result of the action. So there is no ultimate, there is no peace of mind. Right? Having explained that, see, any law you don't understand, what happens when there is any law and you don't understand the law, or either you forget the law or you disregard the law, what happens? If there is any law and you disregard the law or you forget the law or you don't understand the law and you violate the law, what happens? You suffer the consequences. And what does the law of karma say? Every action has a reaction. Number two, that is the first law of karma. What is the second law of karma? You are free to act. You have no freedom to dictate or choose the result of the action. Therefore, when you surrender the result to Lord, there is freedom in your mind. There is peace in your mind. But a karma yogi does not understand this because he is driven by the very desire. So he definitely wants a result. And whatever is the outcome of the result will affect his internal mind also. Now, therefore, afterwards.
Atomic karma also increases.
Sorry?
Atomic karma also.
Yes, of course. Atomic karma also increases, which means again, punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Again, the cycle of birth and death goes on. Now, having therefore completed the discussion on karma yoga up to verse number 12, from verse number 13 to 21, now Krishna takes up the topic of jnana yoga. And we have to understand one thing, that whether when you come to jnana yoga, whenever you want to come to jnana yoga, that is your choice. That you have to come to jnana yoga, do you have a choice? Let me repeat. When you want to come to jnana yoga, that is your choice. Whether you want to come to jnana yoga. That you have to come to jnana yoga, do you have a choice? You don't have a choice. Because if you want moksha, you have to come to jnana yoga. Whether you choose to do it at the early stage or the later stage, whether you choose to do it in this life or the next life, that you have a choice. But ultimately, everyone has to come to jnana yoga. And what is jnana yoga? How do you define, what is the definition of jnana yoga? How do you define jnana yoga? Very simple definition is, jnana yoga is a systematic and consistent study of Vedantic scriptures for a length of time under the guidance of a competent guru. Repeat. Jnana yoga is a systematic and consistent study of Vedantic scriptures for a length of time, it is not a part-time hobby, for a length of time under the guidance of a competent guru. That is called jnana yoga. And what does a yogi, one who has come to this knowledge, what does such a jnana yogi, the attitude or the what we call the marks of a jnani. What are the marks of a jnani? Here Krishna starts by discussing in verse number 13. First of all, he says, sarva karmani manasa sanyasya. The first and second line. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasya. When the jnani discovers that I am not this body, this mind, this intellect, but there is a shift in identification from the lower I to the higher I, therefore you hand over all your actions to the body-mind complex. And the body-mind complex by nature has to act in the world. It has to be active. The body is constantly acting, the mind is constantly acting, the intellect is constantly acting. So how does the jnani renounce? And the renunciation Krishna says is sarva karmani, all your actions. Sannyasa means to renounce. How? Manasa, mentally renounce. Not physically give up actions. A jnani upon attaining knowledge does not physically give up actions, but understands I am the Atma, I am the witness in the body, therefore I mentally renounce all the actions. And you carry on doing all your actions. Hence, at first your attitude is what? I am this body which has Atma. We all start this way. We all understand there is this Atma. So you say, I am this body which has Atma. When you become a jnani, what do you say? I am the Atma who has this temporary body. There is a shift in identification, right? So that's why the renunciation is not physical. The renunciation is mental, at the mental level, right? Previously you say, I did this, I did that. Now you say, in my presence, the body-mind complex is acting, is doing all the actions. Therefore, renunciation can only come through knowledge, through right understanding. It is internal renunciation. That's why when we recite the Mahamrityu Mantra, you know, there's one section where we say what? How do you recite the Mahamrityu Mantra? Triyambakam yajamahe sugandhim pushivardhanam urvarukamiva vandhanat vrityur mokshya mahamrita. Vrityu, moksha. Moksha, you want moksha from vrityu. Is it possible for the physical body to get immortality? We are praying, we are saying, I want immortality, I want amrit, which is immortality. From what? I want freedom from death. How can the physical body have freedom from death? So what are we praying for? We all recite this mantra. We all want freedom from death. Yet, how can this body ever get freedom from death? So what are we praying? Don't get reborn. The physical body will be reborn. There is no way the unless you have reached that state, the physical body will be reborn. The physical body cannot be immortal. It cannot avoid death. Yet we pray for immortality. So what are we praying for?
Free the mind.
Huh?
Free the mind.
Free the mind. How? What do you mean by free the mind?
The vasanas that we carry in the mind. So we just try to overcome them.
The prayer is, once I accept I am the immortal Atma, I accept the mortality of the body, then the greatest advantage is what? When I accept, when there is an identification shift that I am the Atma and this body is mortal, that acceptance gives me the greatest advantage. There is no more fear of death, isn't it? You only fear death because you identify with this mortal body. And this mortal body has to face death. There is no way it can avoid death. So, when we say that we pray for immortality, it means an identification shift away from body to Atma. Once I accept I am the Atma, the fear of death automatically disappears. So that's what we mean when we pray, Mrityu Moksha. May I change my identification and understand that I am not this mortal body. So how, if one understands this now, one accepts that I am the Atma, what is the nature of such a person? Here Krishna says in the second line, Sukham Aste. Aste Sukham means there is calmness, there is peace of mind. there is calmness, there is peace of mind. And how does this jnani carry on his actions? He says, in the last line you see that, naiva kurval. Naiva kurval means neither does he act and na karayat, neither does he cause the body to act. So there are two ways, either we do the action or we instigate somebody to do the action. Either way we are responsible, isn't it? If I do some wrong action, I am responsible. If I instigate somebody to go and do some wrong action, also I am indirectly responsible. Therefore, the role of the Atma in this body is, neither does it do any action, neither is it causing you to do any action. Naiva kurvan na karaya. He is not involved directly or indirectly in any action that the body, mind, intellect performs. And where is this Atma residing? Atma resides in Nava Dware Pure Dehi. The Dehi is the indweller, the Atman. Where does this Atman reside? Nava Dware. Nava means nine. Dwara means door of Pure. Pure means the city. Actually, Pure means the city. This city is nothing else but our body, which has nine gates. So the Atman is residing happily, saying, neither am I doing any action, neither am I instigating any action, happily residing in this body of nine gates. And what are the nine gates in the body? Where are the nine gates? Two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, mouth, organ of reproduction, organ of excretion. These are the nine gates of a body. And just like any city which has nine gates, some gates have one-way entry and some gates have two-way entry. So, like that also our body, eyes, one-way entry, right? We intake what is in the world, and things like mouth, two-way direction. You can eat food and you can also speak also. And thus these are called the nine gates of the body, and the resident of this city is known as the Atman or the Dehi. One who is neither causing the body to act, one who is neither acting nor causing the body also to act. Na kurvan na karaya. Meaning, very important here, the Atman remains as a sakshi, as a witness. Does not act, does not even cause the body to act also, does not instigate any action. It remains as a witness to all the actions. That is the, what we call the state of a jnani, who lets the body, mind continue all the actions but understands that I am the witness in this body. Now we come to verse number 14 here. In verse number 14, now Lord's role also is introduced here. One is, we are looking at the point of Atman. Now we are looking at the point of the total consciousness. And the Lord here is identified by the word Prabhu. If you look at the second line, you see the word Prabhu. Prabhu here indicates the Supreme Lord, absolute consciousness. Right? Now if we think that the Atman in this body is the witness consciousness, we may wrongly conclude that there is a higher authority that is causing these actions also. You know, many times we hear, this has happened, it is the will of God. All our actions, we say, it is the will of God. Therefore, in verse 13, he says, the Atman does not do any actions, neither does he instigate any action. Now, in verse number 14, he says, neither does the Lord, the absolute consciousness, also na kartritvam na karmani. Neither does the Lord also cause us to act or is responsible for any actions at all. The Lord also does not have a role in our actions. neither does he influence or instigate our actions also. There is no higher force responsible. So Prabhu, this universal consciousness, is also the non-doer, it is also the witness. And he says, this Lord does not, na srijati means does not create anything, means does not create any action, and na kartritvam. Now therefore, if the Atman is not causing the body to act, neither is Prabhu, the Lord, also causing this body to act, what is it that causes the body to act? And here he explains it in the fourth line of verse 14. Here he says, Subhavastu pravartate. Subhava, it is the nature, the very nature of what? The nature of the mind, the nature of the body, the nature of the intellect, meaning the three gunas. The three gunas are in the mind, they are in the intellect, they are in the body also. These three gunas are the instigators of our action. Whatever action we do, neither is the Atman responsible, neither is the Lord responsible. So, every action is instigated by the three gunas itself. And very important to note also, na karma phala samyogam. Every action has an equal reaction. Even that the Lord is not responsible. Whatever actions we do and the reaction we receive, even that is not Lord's doing. Now this is to be understood. Lord formulates the laws of karma. The laws of karma are there. But every action is determined by the law of karma. Lord has just created the law of karma and he works independently. So the law of karma acts on its own. Every action we offer to the law of karma, there is a reaction. Even that action and reaction also the Lord does not partake in it also. He does not determine. It is a law of karma that continues to operate by its own nature. So we are all subject to the law of karma. So na karma phala samyogam. And it is the nature, swabhava, which acts. The sattvic, rajasic, gunas, they act. Chapter 14, in fact, will deal in detail with the three gunas. Right? So whatever we do, whatever actions we do, whatever thoughts we think, it is our own inherent nature. Right? And how do we understand this? The simple example is given about electricity and the various gadgets. Just like the electricity in the fan does not cause the fan to rotate, the same electricity in the radio does not cause the radio to produce audio sounds. If the fan rotates, what is the reason? It's because of the swabhava of the fan. Exactly, well put. The fan rotates because of its own nature. The radio produces audio because of its own nature. Electricity does not determine what the radio does, what the fan does. Yet, without the presence of electricity, neither can the radio function, neither can the fan function. So, this body, this mind, this intellect cannot function without the presence of Atman. Now, how does that happen? A simple example is given this way. How come the body, which is made of matter, the mind, which is made of matter, and matter in science is called inert, it has no life of its own, yet it functions? So the simple example is given of fire, flame. Flame has got two properties, which is heat and light. When you put the flame next to an iron rod has got no properties of heat, neither has it got any property of light. When you put the flame next to the iron rod, what happens to the iron rod? It acquires the property of the flame, it becomes hot and it becomes bright. Right? Same relation is to the Atman and the body. When the Atman is in contact with the body, the body acquires the what we call the consciousness of the Atman and it acts. Right? Thus, when the Atman is not there, the body is not able to function because it has no properties of consciousness. So, in the same way, in the inbuilt nature of the fan to rotate and the inbuilt nature of the radio to produce audio, in the same way, Atman is there, but it does not determine what the body or the mind functions. It is the swabhava, the very nature. Each individual person have their own individual natures. We act according to our own individual nature. And that also another example is given constantly in our Upanishads is the example of light. The light remains the same. Under the sunlight, a criminal can go about robbing people or another person can go about helping people under the same sunlight. Sunlight is one, it is equal to all, it shines on everybody, but whatever the person does under the sunlight depends on the very nature or swabhava of the person. So that point also is very, very much made clear in verse number 40. What? Sorry?
The gunas,
exactly. The swabhava here means the gunas, the three gunas. They are the nature, that's what we call nature of a person, the inherent nature is determined by the composition of the three gunas. Whether sattva dominates in you or we have all the three gunas, we must understand this. It is not that you don't have the two gunas, you only have one. You have all the three gunas, but one guna will dominate the other two. And that depends on your own individual nature. Yes?
At one point you were tamasic there and became rajasic, then sattvic, then eventually you will have to transcend, right? Transcend
all the three gunas.
So did God like transcend his three gunas or did he have three gunas?
God is beyond the three gunas. God is what is known as three gunatit. He is beyond the three gunas. See, God is the consciousness. So what we have is a consciousness. Then we have prakriti, which means nature, the creation. Okay? The gunas are in the creation. The gunas are not in the consciousness. So you have consciousness, you have the created world, and you have the three gunas. Where are the three gunas? They are in the creation. They are not in God. God is beyond the three gunas. He's not at all affected by the three gunas. Otherwise, if God has the three gunas, then even he can be tamasic, rajasic or sattvic. The three gunas were created by Lord and put into prakriti. Prakriti meaning the creation. So he created the three gunas. Now why did he create the three gunas? The three gunas activate the creation. Because, excuse me, the body needs to function, right? So sattvic gunas were given to us. Why? To gain knowledge, to be pure. Rajasic gunas were also given to us to be active. And tamasic gunas were given to us to rest or sleep or relax. Right? Now all the three gunas are important in us. However, if tamasic gunas dominate, then what happens? Most of the time you are ignorant, you are lazy, inactive. If rajasic gunas dominate, you are active but for selfish reasons. But if sattvic gunas dominate, sattva controls rajas, controls tamas, your actions become good actions because you are able to control rajas, your activity, and at the same time you are not given to ignorance with tamas. So sattva must always dominate rajas and tamas. That's why the three gunas were put into prakriti to activate prakriti. And it is up to us whether we strengthen our sattvic or rajasic or tamasic gunas. That freedom lies in our hands. Okay? And God is beyond all the three gunas.
Which of the law of karma?
Yeah.
The law of karma is not under the control of...
The law of karma is designed by God, but he does not choose what happens. That means he is free from that. So every action has a reaction. Just like, okay, we can look at it this way. Lord is like parliament. He sets the laws and the rules, right? But who enforces the rules? It's the police and the judge, right? The parliament does not get involved. So the laws are laid out, but it is karma that activates operates on its own nature. So Lord is even beyond the laws of karma. He does not interfere with that. And we are subject to the laws of karma. Right? So in this case, law, the God also does not play judge and jury also. He is beyond that also.
Correct.
Where did the law come from? So it still had to come from. It originates from him, but it operates independent of him. Right? It originates from him, but it operates independent from him. So he does not get involved in the law of karma. He does not decide that you should get this and you should get that. He is beyond that. Akarta. He is the non doer.
Like a computer system that has built something for you.
Yes, okay, you can say something like that. What you key in is what you get back. So you cannot blame the manufacturer of the computer. Whatever you key in is what you get back. But the manufacturer has created the computer to serve you. How you use it is up to you.
So when you look at it that way, when you tell children, when you tell younger people that God is compassionate, God is motherly, God is fatherly, all those qualities, when you wave with this, then it doesn't matter because God is impersonal. Whether you are good or bad, it doesn't matter because you see the repercussions are going to be according to law.
Law karma, yes.
But how do you tell the youngster that all the ones that I told you that God is compassionate, is motherly, is fatherly, and is a friend, everything? So you are actually altering the picture by trying to put him.
First of all, why were all these stories created in the Puranas? You do this, you will be punished. You know, you do that, this will happen to you. You tell lies, God will, you know, punish you. Initially, we have to bring God in the equation. Because for us to understand that God is beyond that requires a refined mind to understand this. So to children, that's why we have various stories. We are told of this story, this fellow did like this, he was so bad, and this is the punishment God gave him. So we bring in God as the element who punishes and who rewards. But that's why here, when we come to Jnana Yoga, then we understand that even God is even beyond that also. He is a non-doer. He has created the world, he has created the various creations, animals, plants, insects, humans, and then you are free to carry on according to your own action. Right? But come to that understanding, it's not easy, so one should not confuse the children at the initial stage. Right? That's why we tell them stories, that's why we tell them do this, do that, you know, if not, God will punish you, don't pray, God will punish you, you don't go temple, God will punish you. We bring them as a fear factor. Right? Exactly, yes. So that's why.
They admit
the hardship.
Right. So first thing is they don't go to a church, they go to temple, they fall down, they cry their heart out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And so whether you go there and
you actually
cry your heart out, it's not going to change.
Right.
God,
your karma is not going to change.
God is not going to sing.
Yeah.
Then the person loses faith completely. You know, when he's despair, he needs to fall his
heart. Sorry, don't confuse these people. If they have the faith, they are going to temple and they are praying with faith, don't confuse them. That's why Jnana Yoga is a different level by itself.
And because then he becomes an atheist. You say that. Well,
yeah, exactly.
Because, whether you call God or not, he's not going to listen. There's no God, that's just a false.
Yeah.
So
that's why one has to come to this Jnana Yoga. One cannot, explain to these people because they are going through that turmoil. They need some consolation. So they go to temple, church, etc. Let them carry on pray.
And then action is going to purify them.
Well, action will give them the strength to handle that karma which is coming. So let them develop their inner strength through prayer. It's good. And then eventually when they are ready to come to Jnana Yoga, then you talk to them about this Jnana. Otherwise you confuse them, you might turn them into atheists also. Right?
True, it's true. Basically, you know, this Guru, Isha, you came with one thing that is, I think many people heard this. They, you don't have to go to the temple, because temple is not a place for you to pray.
Right.
He says, you pray, you want to pray, you pray in the house.
Okay.
Temple is a place where energy is created, where you go and absorb this energy.
Right.
That is why people are asked to go and
sit down. Right.
And then absorb this energy before you start your work. Or then you know the day will be happy for you, peaceful for you.
Right.
I think some of the people must have heard that, you know that.
No, it's true, but that again, as what sister said, if somebody is in that state of distress, he wants to go to temple and he finds that the temple by prayer gives him some solace, gives him some comfort, gives him some strength, by all means go ahead. Right? But yes, what Brother Raju said, the temple is actually for you to recharge your energy, but not everybody is ready in that state. So we have to let them come to that state gradually and naturally. Right? So here it states very clearly that he is neither the doer, nor does he decide on the union of the fruit of your action and reaction. The law of karma takes care of itself. Now, in verse number 15, here, if Lord, therefore, is not the doer of the action, see here again, very important point, it is not God's will that has to decide whether one person suffers or one person enjoys. That's why when we say it is a will of God, it's a very, it's not a very correct statement, because then how does God decide who enjoys and who suffers? On what basis does He decide? Why is one born healthy? Why is one born unhealthy? On what basis has God decided? And if God has made an arbitrary decision to reward somebody and punish somebody, then that God is not a just God, isn't it? That means that reward or punishment has got to be on the basis of something. Otherwise, we are putting an accusation on God that it is God's will, then how does He decide things? Not just arbitrarily taking some names out from the lottery board and seeing whose name is there, this person is punished. Another part, it takes out the name, this person is rewarded. So therefore also here, here again, if God also is acting or causing people to act, then who should get the results of the action? If you do a mistake, who should be punished? You are right. If God causes you to act, then who should be rewarded? God, isn't it? Then why should we have to go through punarapi, jananam, punarapi, manarapi? It is God then who has got to go through that. So very careful when we think, when we say this is God's will, what are we actually saying? It is not God's will. It is the law of karma that is operating. So here also very clearly he says here, kasyachit, anybody's papam na addate. The Lord does not accept or take anybody's papam also. Because if he is not acting, neither is he causing you to act, then why should he also accept the papam also? Even the papam also does not touch him also. The papam belongs to you, the one who is doing the action. Therefore, we should never say that this is God's will. Right? The will has got to be based on something. It is not God's will, it is the law of karma. So Lord does not accept the papam done by anyone. Okay, what about the punyam? Punyam here in the second line of verse 15 is described as sukritam. Sukritam is actually punyam. Sukritam means happiness. So that is joyful things. Good things are due to our punyam. Nai chaiva sukritam. Even your punyam also Lord does not accept. Since He is not the doer, the punyam and papam also do not accrue to the Lord. Just like as I gave the example earlier, the sun provides the sunlight to the whole world, but under the sunlight, whatever bad deeds you do, whatever good deeds you do, does not affect the sun at all, right? If the sunlight is shining on a dirty pond of water, the pond is dirty, the dirt does not affect the sun. If the pond is pure and clear, it also does not affect the condition of the sun. And Lord here is given another name. In verse 14, he was called Prabhu, which means Lord. Here in verse 15, he is called Vibhu. Vibhu, which means the all-pervading one. He is everywhere. Yet, meaning just like space, space is everywhere, but space is never tainted by wherever it is. Space cannot be wet. Space cannot be made dirty. Space remains pure, although it is everywhere. It is in bed. That means what? God is also present in the sinner. God is also present in the saint also. But whatever the actions of the saint and the sinner, although God is everywhere, he is totally untouched, totally unaffected also. And that's why God is always compared, or this consciousness is always compared to space, a sangha, right? It is also all-pervading, but when it rains, space does not get wet. When there is fire, space does not get burnt also. And therefore here he says, then why is it therefore we get confused or we get deluded? Who are those people who get deluded also? Here Krishna says in the third line, Ajnanena avritam jnanam. This jnanam, this knowledge, is avritam, means it is covered by what? By ajnana. Ajnana means ignorance. It is because of our ignorance that we don't understand this very important fact. And thus we keep on blaming God for anything bad that happens. We keep on saying it is God's will. Out of our own ignorance, we don't understand that God is a non-doer, does not get affected, does not even influence our actions. So all our problems in life are due to this very ignorance. Ignorance of what? First of all, ignorance of our own higher nature, that we are not this body. Because of this very ignorance, we get entangled in all the interactions of life. Each and every interaction with the world affects us. So therefore, having this state of ignorance, this ajnanam, Krishna says, Tena muhyanti jantava. The word jantava here is a very unique word used by Lord here, because the word jantava actually means animals. He calls these ignorant people as animals. Now why does he equate ignorant people with animals? Lack of discrimination. We all have this capacity of the intellect, to use this intellect. The only difference between an animal and a human is, the human is equipped with the intellect. By all accounts, a human should not be in a state of ignorance. But because you don't use the intellect, you are continuously in a state of ignorance. Therefore, the difference between an ignorant person and an animal does not exist. They are one and the same. So here Krishna addresses or calls such people as jantava, as animals. And such people, he says, muhyati, they are totally deluded. They are under a state of delusion. And since if our problems are all due to this ignorance, when we say ignorance means not that we don't have knowledge, but either we don't contemplate on this knowledge, or either we are not interested in this knowledge, that's why we remain in a state of ignorance, we don't give importance to this knowledge. If our problems are caused by a lack of knowledge due to ignorance, what is the remedy? What is the treatment? Has to be knowledge. So in the very next verse, he gives us the remedy. Verse number 16.
How does
Ishvara Prasadam Kami. Okay, good question. The thing is, again, we come back to our level of understanding. Ishvara Arpanam and Ishvara Prasadam is at what level? Karma Yoga level. When we come to Jnana Yoga, since neither I am the doer, neither I am the receiver. So where is the question of Ishvara Arpanam and Ishvara Prasadam? So it is at different levels. At the initial level, we accept that I am the doer, but I am instrument in the hands of God, so I accept everything as Ishvara Prasadam. But when I say I am not the doer, if I am not the karta, then neither am I the bhokta. How can I be the receiver if I am not the doer? So that again comes to a different, higher level of understanding. Then there is no more Ishvara Arpanam and no more Ishvara Prasadam.
Can you say that
even
the state?
Yes, Stita Prajna, you remember chapter 2, Krishna spoke about the Stita Prajna.
We are
part of
God. Why did God
put
us down here and then what is
come back? Very good question. That's a very good question. In fact, this question is asked many times in spiritual retreats and there is actually no answer. There is really no answer. I'm not joking. Because the question is, again you have to go back to the Upanishads, the creation. The Lord created the world because of a desire to have many. God had the desire in the beginning, it said he wanted to have many, so he made a huge creation. Yeah, that is also another good question. How come God also had the desire in the very beginning, right? Possible, maybe. So this is a question that has never been answered. Why have we been created and then made to go back again to God, right? We have been created, we have to go through all the, you know, karma yoga, jnana yoga, this, that, and then go back again to God. Now, why put us here? But that's a question that has never been answered up to today. I have not found a suitable answer. So the question here is always said that you go through karma yoga, jnana yoga, then the answer may come to you one day also. So you have to slowly come to that. Maybe that understanding would come at a later stage, right? But up to now, I have not discovered that answer yet.
One answer that was given was that he's bored. And he needed to see this drama just to...
Yeah, some people say yes, he created this drama, this whole world is nothing but a drama again.
But then he thinks that now he realizes that because he gave us free will, so he can't take that back. And you know, he has put us in such a...
Situation.
He has regrets and he wants us back.
Yes, regrets. So God also desires and God has regrets.
I mean, he has regrets that way. He wants us back the right way.
Right.
But I wonder when, say, finally at the end of the world, when everybody ultimately joins him and comes one with him, whether he will recreate anything or he'll say, that's it.
I'm not going to make the same mistake again.
And again, of course, you know, this might sound a bit silly, but I mean, I'm asking out of ignorance. If he, like you said that, you know, he gave the three gunas, and why couldn't he have straight away when he made the first man or he made a few people first, whatever, he could have just said that, he could have given about, say about 80% of, you know, sattvic there and 10% of or 20% of rajasic and just 2% of, I mean, he could have just made the proportion so much easier that we are so highly in that sattvic, you know, proportion that it would have been just like a snap of finger, it could have been all be good and the more the sattvic thing. I mean, why didn't
see, to that there is an answer. The thing is, if you go back to the first yuga, Satya Yuga, there was more sattvicness around. More people were sattvic in nature.
Yeah.
But because he gave us this free will, we have misused this free will. And then through the yugas, we became more selfish. We became more self-centered. And then you see all these things happen during Mahabharata time towards the Dwapara Yuga. So they were warning us about what is going to happen in Kali Yuga, where people started getting more selfish, started cheating and lying and all these kind of things happening. And of course, we are seeing the worst in Kali Yuga. So because of this free will, we have strayed away. Now, if you look at Krishna, Krishna himself was there in Dwapara Yuga. He was very much there in manifestation in Dwapara Yuga. God himself was there. Yet, how many people believed in him? How many people surrendered to him? How many people worshipped him? There were people who tried to do harm to him. That means even when God comes, yet man is not ready to accept. Why? Because of his selfish nature. So now it's even worse because it's in Kali Yuga also, and we don't have God manifested here. We have saints and sages. So it all depends on our free will, how we have abused our free will. And thus we became more rajasic, we became more tamasic, and sattva has gone down. Yet, Krishna says there in chapter 4, seeing the decline in this knowledge, I decided to take a manifestation to re-establish this knowledge at the end of Dwapara Yuga. But when he re-established his knowledge, again how many people are interested in it?
He
is
reboot the world.
Reboot.
If he took away that
tamasic,
that we were part of him,
right?
If we all knew that we are actually a part of him,
right?
That would have made us realize much easier for everybody.
So again, free will. We still have a right to choose what we want to do.
Yeah, but that free will, we being a part of God, okay? If God is perfection, why is that? That little portion that came out of him, which is all of us, had to have kind of devious thoughts, other thoughts. Whereas God is supposed to be perfect and have a perfect world. But how is that we have those kind of things? So, in what is God's?
You see, all it starts with a little wrong action, right? You start telling one lie, you get away with one lie, then becomes another bigger lie, until you find that lying is your way of life. So it starts always with that small action, and then we get away with it.
But he didn't pull us back, he didn't correct us.
That's why he is the non-doer. He is the non-doer. He created you, he gave you the free will, and said, now you do what you want.
He created the world for his own Leela.
That's what she was saying, yes. But again, it's one explanation, but whether, you know, it is correct or not. Whether, did God create us for a sport? To enjoy it and watch all this drama.
He has to pass time now.
So where is entertainment?
Otherwise non-doer, non-action, non-everything.
Right.
So the only way that he could create something so that his qualities, whatever good or bad, free will and everything could be like exercise.
That's why it's still a mystery. Is it the world has been created as a spot for God to see everything going on? Or what is the grand master plan of God?
It's not really concerned with all the other religious beliefs.
Exactly, exactly, yes.
But other religious beliefs are human, mostly human. We evolve them as we go along. We make our own rules for various religions. We're talking about religion. But if we're talking about spirituality, then that's different. It's
more or less. So one day, if somebody will discover that mystery, so how does now, here he says, to remove that that ignorance, and the only way here, verse 16, he says is, jnanina. For the ajnanis, in verse number 16, tat ajnanam, that ignorance can only be removed through knowledge. That means whatever other spiritual sadhana we do, is never going to help us to remove the state of ignorance. We can do all types of sadhana. You can do fasting, you can go to temple, you can go on pilgrimages, whatever you want to do. I'm not saying it's not important, it is important, but understand it will never remove your state of ignorance. So that's why it says here, jnanena tat ajnanam nashitam. Nashitam means it will be totally destroyed, that ignorance will be totally destroyed only through jnana, only through knowledge. And what type of knowledge? Not just any knowledge, it has to be specific knowledge. So in the second line he says that jnanam is atmanaha. Until we realize our real identity, our higher identity, which we are the Atman, the witness consciousness, only that knowledge can remove your state of ignorance. Totally remove your state of ignorance. Atmana Jnana, knowledge of the self. And as I told you, knowledge of the self is what again? Systematic, consistent study of the scriptures for a length of time under the guidance of a competent guru. That is what is called Jnana Yoga. And how would this Jnana Yoga remove our ignorance? Here Krishna gives a simple example. Using the example of third line, you see the word Aditya. Aditya means sun. Like the sun reveals itself, this supreme consciousness also will reveal itself to you once you attain this knowledge. Now, the sun is there all the time. It is shining all the time. Similarly, this Atman is within us all the time. It exists 24/7. Yet we are unable to realize it. Just like the sun, we are unable to see it when clouds are blocking the sun. So you don't have to take a separate light, you don't need to take a candle or you don't take a torchlight to go and shine on the sun. If you want to see the sun, the only way is for the clouds to be removed. And what are these clouds? Our ignorance and the dirt of our mind, the malam, the what we call the ego, the jealousy, the pride, the anger, envy. Until all this dirt is removed from our mind and the final dirt of ignorance is removed from our mind, that Atman which is there will reveal itself to you. You will feel that Satchit Ananda, that consciousness which is within. So knowledge is very, very important to remove the final dirt which is ignorance. Once that ignorance is removed and you understand your own real nature, then automatically that Satchit Ananda is realized or experienced by you. That's Swami Teju Mayananda said, once a person achieves that level of consciousness, he gave a beautiful line to say, how does one lead the life? He says, you lead your life as inside Rama, outside Rama. Everything that is going on outside is a drama, but inside is Rama. That you are established firmly in that consciousness. It reveals itself like the sun, Aditya Vat, full of effulgence. And that is how a Jnani gets this knowledge. Now, in verse number 17, he is still explaining about the nature of the Jnani here. And what is that nature of the Jnani once he or she has attained that knowledge? If you look at verse number 17, the word tat appears four times there. Tat buddhayas, tat atmanas, tan nishta, tat parayanaha. Four times this word tat appears in verse number 14. And what is this word tat used for? That meaning God or that supreme consciousness. So when we talk about supreme consciousness, it's the same as Atman. Atman and supreme consciousness is one and the same. So first of all, what is the nature of this Jnani who has attained this knowledge? Krishna says, tat parayanaha. Parayanaha is for two words here. Ayanaha means destination or goal. Para means highest goal. What is that highest goal? Moksha. That is the goal of a Jnani. Tat parayanaha, that is his goal. So every transaction, whatever I do, there is this inner transformation to work towards this one goal, to achieve that oneness with God. And what else he says? Tat buddhaya, even the intellect, the buddhi, the intellect is also absorbed in God also. That means continuously there is acquisition of knowledge going on. Shravanam mananam, this must not stop. The intellect must be firmly established in that one goal, that one divinity, tat. Tat atmanaha, Atmanaha here means what? Atmanaha. Here the word Atmanaha means not faith. Here Atmanaha means mind, manas, manas. Okay? Here Atmanaha means manas or the mind also. So everything, the mind, when the body and the mind and the intellect, everything merge into that one destiny, that one goal. That means a devotee continuously lives in that God consciousness. Mind is constantly absorbed in God, intellect is constantly absorbed in God, that goal is never forgotten. That one goal in life is to reach God is never forgotten. And thus, Krishna says, that person is tan nishtaha. Nishtaha means very steadfast. Is not distracted at all from the main goal. You can have many temporary goals in life. That is okay. But the most important is don't lose sight of the primary goal in life. So therefore, this person remains steadfast on the goal. And what is the, what is the result of such a jnani who lives his life like that? Krishna says, nirduta kalmasha. Kalmasha means the impurities. Kalmasha impurities are nirduta. They are all removed. All the impurities are eradicated. And main impurity, as I explained earlier, is nothing but ignorance. It is the ignorance which is the biggest impurity that is a barrier to our spiritual growth. So the main thing is, once ignorance is removed, the final impurity is removed, and you have set your goal, your intellect, your mind, your actions are all dedicated to reaching God. So nirduta kalmasa. But you must understand, although your focus is on the primary goal, what still remains? Why does the body still remain alive? Because of prarabdha karma. You have to wait until prarabdha karma exhausts itself. And then what happens? Krishna says, gacchantya punar avrittim. They reach a state of no return. This state of no return has got to go through two stages. One is called jivan mukta. That means while you are alive, you have reached the state of no return. What do we mean by state of no return? While you are alive. The first stage. You don't have any more impurities. But what is the state of no return? Now you are still alive. It is called jivan mukta. So what is the state of no return? It's not moksha. You have not attained moksha yet. You are still alive. You are still carrying out all your duties, all your action. You are waiting for the prarabdha karmas to finish. And then only the body will fall. So you have not attained that moksha yet. So what is the state of no return? What is happening daily? So you cannot go back to your old life. The way you were looking at the world, the way you were transacting. It is said that a literate person cannot become an illiterate. Once you have got the knowledge, you've gone through primary school, secondary school, you've gone through university, you cannot become an illiterate person. So you have burned the bridges with your past life. You are no more living the way you were living before. That is called a state of no return. And that is what is called jivan muktaha. And then when all the prarabdha karmas are burned, when this body falls, then is called a second type of moksha, which is called videha mukti. Videha means without a body. So there is no more return back to this cycle of birth and death. So that is called punaravritti. There is a state of no return. At two stages. One, while you are living, you cannot go back to your old way. Your old thoughts are all totally destroyed. And second is, when you get Videha Mukti, you don't come back and take a second birth also. The cycle of birth and death is eradicated. Okay, so
the
saints, Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Adi Sankaracharya, Bhagavan Ramana Maharishi, Swami Vivekananda, all these were Jivan Muktas. So they were just waiting until the prarabdha karma is exhausted and then they give up this. But if there is a desire by that saint to come back, he will come back. Because he does not desire moksha, he still wants to come back and serve the people. There are saints who again will come back again. So it depends on them. Or those who have totally surrendered to God, they leave it in the hands of God. Whether they get moksha or not, they are surrendered that also to the hands of God. So all these people are called Jivan Mukta. They are living and they are free from the shackles of life.
If they like desire to come back, where they are in their spiritual journey, will they still remain there?
Chapter 6, Krishna says this, whatever you have reached that stage, when you take the next life, that all that is brought forward. So you start again from that. Supposing you have reached 99%, when you take birth, you carry on 99%. You don't go back again to 5 or 10%. So all that is brought forward. And that's why we see people like Adi Shankaracharya, when they're born immediately, they have desire to become a sannyasi. So they don't want to go through all the normal life and all. They immediately want to take up sannyasi. That is all the carry forward from the past life.
Next month,
I will be here along with you, don't worry. Yes, sure.
When you say moksha,
yeah,
is that a term with a change of birth in
Samadhi also has what we call, when we say Samadhi, there are people who, example like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, who reached Samadhi while he was sitting down, sometimes just listening to devotees, he will suddenly go into a state of Samadhi, he loses total consciousness. So one type of Samadhi. Second type of Samadhi is when this physical body drops, that's when we call that these saints have reached Samadhi. Sorry? Just Savikalpa Samadhi, Nirvikalpa Samadhi, various levels of Samadhi. And thus, that's why it seems that these sages, they don't cremate the body. They have no reason to cremate. In fact, there was one sage who said, take my body, throw it into the sea. At least the fishes can eat. They can benefit from the body. Because he has totally detached himself from the body.
So you can't equate it with moksha.
It is moksha. There's another word they call it, samadhi. They use different words, savikalpa samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, all that. Different terminology, it means one and the same. But we just say jivan mukta and videha mukta. That's it. Okay, we end with the prayer.
Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanuram ardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadguru.